Chapter 8, in which memory rivals experience. Quote, Je me souviens donc j'ai été. Translation, I remember, therefore I was. It was 3 o'clock in the morning when Mahogany awoke on the way to Nice. The modern trains ran more quickly than the old ones. But despite the 20 years that had passed in the cave, the compartments were essentially unchanged. They consisted of 6 seats, 3 facing 3, with luggage racks overhead and a sliding door opening to the aisle. Harvey was nestled in the corner against the aisle wall, and Mahogany was diagonally across from him, leaning his head against the window. The tracks followed the coast, and Mahogany could see the swelling mass of the Mediterranean rise and roll, tearing into thin white breakers that flashed in the dark. He remembered his transatlantic voyage, leaving Cape Cod, uncertain of his course, drifting in the obscurity of his soul. More than once he had been tempted to abandon ship and, setting his foot upon the hills of water, let the earth drop from beneath him. After his loss in San Diego, he had been as a man overboard. Life went on for others. The ship did not stop. The wind was firm. The course must be kept. But he was left behind, appearing and disappearing, plunged beneath the surface. He called out and extended his arms, but no one could hear. He saw the disappearing sail. He had been there moments before, had been one of the crew, had moved upon the deck, had enjoyed his share of sun and sky. He had been a living man. Then he slipped. Now he was drowning in the monstrous deep. Beneath him, the engulfing abyss. Around him, darkness and storm. Within him, horror and fatigue. He was paralyzed by the cold. His hands clutched spasmodically, grasping nothing. Life was pain, and he longed to abandon the fight and slip into the rolling dark. Oh, misère misérable! Oh, implacable march of human interaction, destruction of hearts and souls marking its path. Abyss where all fall, betrayed by a kiss. The sea is the inexorable night into which the heartless cast their victims. It is the measureless misery. The soul that sinks there will become a corpse. Who will restore it to life? Occasionally the train would leave the coast and weave inland. A spattering of street lamps would announce the approach of a small town, and the main road would come into view. Running parallel to the tracks, the street would pass the all-night stations and stores, then branch into other roads, diverging in the distance. Pulling out of the town, the lights would vanish, and the roads would become one again, and Mahogany would continue to stare, registering the night's reflections, and following the random thoughts they triggered in his mind. When they pulled into Marseille, the train was too long to fit into the station, and Mahogany's car did not reach the platform. It began to rain, and he gazed out the window through the drops that streaked the glass. He heard voices in the distance, people running, a family. They were stirred and excited, sparked by the energy of the night. They rushed from the station to their car. They laughed. He heard the doors open and close, and he imagined the commotion as they settled into their seats. He could smell the clean fragrance of dark, damp hair. Then the motor roared, and he saw 2 headlights peer into the glistening river of rain. When the train left the station, Mahogany thought of Beatrice. It was only 2 days since he had seen her, but it seemed like 20 years. For her it had been 20 years, and Mahogany tried to imagine how she would look, but saw her only as she had been, getting on the bus. He remembered the slenderness of her hand as she reached for the rail, and he imagined the play of gravity as her weight moved from heel to ball to toe. He remembered the line of her calf as she paused, one foot on the bus and the other on the ground, and how she pushed up, bringing both feet onto the step, then vanished and reappeared at the window. He remembered her eyes. The sea continued to toss, and Mahogany relived their evening encounter. He could linger now in the contemplation of her olive complexion, the curve of her lips, and the flash of her smile. A lock of hair, damp in the warm night, had clung to her neck beneath her ear, and when she brushed it back with a wave of her hand, the dampness left a glow of perspiration on her skin. He admired the fine line of her eyebrows. He observed how her hair grew evenly from her temples and forehead, and how the tips had become tinted red by the southern sun. When she pulled the locks back, running them through her hand, the darker strands beneath washed over her with a dramatic blackness. Then the tinted strands fell on top, streaking and lighting her inky mane. Where was she tonight? Among what people? Saying what things? Dreaming what dreams? After a while, Mahogany dozed off, and when he awoke, he was alone in the compartment. It was morning, and Helios had begun to drive his chariot across the sky, casting a golden path on the water and painting the undersides of the clouds. It was one of those rare dawns that occur at every moment at some place in the world, and Mahogany was moved. He wondered, as all people do, if others felt his same emotion. He reasoned that either no one could feel what he felt, or else everyone could. Both considerations seemed unsatisfactory. The first was a solitary one, impossible to share, and the second was vulgar, destroying the moment's sublimity by attenuating it at the hands of the masses. He preferred the first alternative, considering his experience to be of unparalleled depth, reserved expressly for himself. They were almost to Nice when Harvey returned to the compartment, mumbling about the interminable line to the bathroom. For Harvey it had been interminable, because no sooner had he relieved himself and left the WC, then he was confronted with the next person waiting to get in. When Harvey took on the person's character, he inherited their urge as well, and was inspired to rejoin the line and wait for another turn. Harvey might have gone on forever in this infinite loop, except that on one occasion he happened to exit just as a woman stepped out of the adjacent WC, and her own great relief so overwhelmed Harvey that he was carried with her into the corridor and back to his compartment. At 8 o'clock in the morning, they arrived in Nice. But when they stepped off the train, Harvey was swept up in a river of travelers that were boarding a train on the adjacent track, and Mahogany was forced to get on as well. It was a local train that ran along the Mediterranean at 100 feet above sea level, and made stops at each town from Nice to Ventimiglia. From the window they could see the local fishermen on the rocks, dangling their lines into the breakers. Mahogany was about to comment on the beauty of such a simple, carefree life, when the compartment suddenly went black. "Hi!" yelled Harvey. "Phaethon has lost the chariot and plunged his horses into the sea." A moment later, the train emerged from the tunnel it had entered, and the sun returned. The entire journey from Nice to the Italian border passed through a series of tunnels cut into the rock, and each time the train entered and emerged, our heroes were deposited above one small bay after another. Sometimes they could see boats and homes near the water, other times only a simple footpath, and others, only the virgin rocks and trees. The scene alternated from sun to shadow to sun, like a photograph or a series of photos splashed across the film of the mind. By the end of their journey along the Riviera, Mahogany had learned to accept the darkness and wait for the light at the end of the tunnel, living on the dream of light behind and the promise of light ahead. During one interval of light, he spotted some men playing boule near a small town and convinced Harvey to get off. The town of Carnoles was the third to last stop before reaching Italy. Without any particular claim to fame, it was one of the few towns on the French Riviera that had not been spoiled by the plague of tourism and overpopulation, and even in the year 2013 it still maintained much of its charm of 40 years before. As Harvey and Mahogany walked down from the station, they were overwhelmed by the color and fragrance of flowers. There were blossoms everywhere. Blossoms in the windows, blossoms on the balconies, blossoms along the fences, blossoms in the yards. When they reached the beginning of Cap Martin, they found the men they had seen from the train. The men were laughing and joking in French, arguing about the position of the balls, calling out their scores, and removing their caps to scratch their heads. Mahogany sat down to watch them play. He was enchanted by the contrast of this age-old tradition with the modern build-up around him, and when the men noticed his interest, they invited him to join them. He was glad to, and when they began to play, the captain wandered off. Harvey walked along a road that circled the Cape. It was paved and pleasant, and just wide enough for two cars to pass beneath the overhanging palms. On the inland side, scattered among the rocks and trees, there were homes with their doors and windows open wide, and on the other side was a stairway that led to a footpath along the coast. Longing to be near the sea, Harvey descended the stairs. The path wove gracefully in and out of the trees, curling around the rocks and bending to an occasional opening where the waves crashed in. At one of the openings, Harvey stopped and stood in the spray. The water slapped from rock to rock, died in a froth, then retreated to surge anew. "O ageless wave," said Harvey, "tireless Sisyphus of the sea, century upon century has seen your unending labor sharpening your tongue on the stones." Footnote. Sisyphus, of Greek mythology, told his wife not to bury him upon his death so that he might ask Hades to let him return to the living to avenge the dishonor. Once Sisyphus returned, he refused to go back to the underworld and had to be dragged there by Hermes. Subsequently, Sisyphus was sentenced to forever roll an enormous boulder up a hill, one which would continually roll back down after reaching the top. Only one time did he ever stop to rest, when Orpheus sang in the underworld while searching for Eurydice. In this case, Sisyphus is a wave, and his labor is to continually crash against the coast. Moving closer, Harvey climbed out to a jagged promontory that overlooked the water, and as soon as he sat down, he took on the personality of the place. "Aquí, junto al mar latino, digo la verdad. Siento en roca, aceite y vino, yo mi antigüedad." Translation. "Here, next to the Latin sea, I speak the truth. I feel in rock, oil, and wine my antiquity." From the Rubén Darío poem Eu. And Harvey did feel the antiquity of the sea, for he had unknowingly slipped into the exact shape of a stone there some million years before, and he was immediately transported to prehistory.